It was a cold night in January of 2024. Somewhere outside Boulder, Colorado, a man stood alone in his backyard, breath rising in the dark, hand steady on the focus ring of his telescope. This was routine for him. He wasn't a professional, just an amateur astronomer with a few upgrades, logging deep sky objects for a university database. He'd been tracking the same patch of space for months. But that night, something was different. At first, he thought it was a glitch, thermal bloom, or motion blur. But the object was too precise, too smooth. It shimmered just for a moment and then curved. Not drifted, curved. It was moving deliberately, slow, warm, artificial. He spent the next hour rerunning the sequence. No matches in satellite databases. No transients. It was coming from behind the sun, right into view. 2 days later, he posted one final message to a small astronomy Discord. And I quote, "If anyone else saw it, say something now, because I think it wanted to be seen." Then, nothing. Silence. His telescope logs were wiped. His Discord account deleted. His house went quiet. They say he moved, but his sister's still looking for him. It started with a rumor. James Webb saw something it wasn't supposed to. Days later, astronomers started dying. Then, two of the biggest telescope companies just disappeared. Congress got briefed. The public didn't. And now, there's something out there, artificial, inbound, and adjusting its trajectory. I've been pulling at this thread for weeks, and the deeper I went, the more it started lining up. Telescope shutdowns, missing probe data, even a pattern of astronomer deaths tied to a single sliver of sky. At first, it felt like noise, but there's something underneath it. A signal that keeps surfacing across centuries, buried in scientific journals, infrared scans, and classified mission data. Whatever this thing is, we may have seen it before. In 1827, in 1859, in every moment we were told it was just a fluke. If it really arrives in the year 2027, then it's not just coming, it's been watching. Hey, if you're still here, it means you're not just here for the surface level stories. You're chasing something deeper, like we are. So please do me a favor, hit subscribe, because if we don't build this community, the algorithm isn't going to help us and no one's going to tell these stories at all. All right, onward. Okay, so here's what I found, and it's not what I expected. There's an object moving through space right now. Not a comet, not an asteroid, it's something else. Artificial, controlled, and headed our way. The problem isn't that it exists. The problem is how hard they've worked to make sure we never saw it. Because once you start tracking the pattern, you find dead scientists, broken probes, missing sky coverage. In an entire chunk of the southern hemisphere locked behind institutional walls. Every time someone gets close to the truth, something strange happens. People go silent, data disappears, or the entire conversation just vanishes. But the deeper you dig, the clearer it becomes. This isn't a recent discovery. It's something they've been watching for a long time. And if the timelines are right, we're not looking at the beginning of the story. We're looking at the return. Let's talk about what the James Webb Space Telescope is actually capable of. It wasn't designed to track fast-moving objects. In fact, the JWST needs long exposure times, upwards of 100 seconds, to capture deep space targets in the infrared. That means anything moving faster than 1% the speed of light is basically invisible to it. And even 1% is pushing it. So when people started whispering that the JWST saw something artificial, something moving, I knew there was a narrow window where that could even be possible. That window, it's real. JWST orbits the Sun-Earth L2 point 1.5 million kilometers from Earth, shielded from heat, permanently aimed away from the Sun. It can't look through the Sun. It can't even look near the Sun. There's a blind spot about 50 degrees wide. So, what happens if something intentionally uses that blind spot? What if an object traveling slow enough, cold enough, and controlled enough emerged just outside that exclusion zone? Just long enough to be detected? Just long enough to be flagged? Maybe just long enough to brief Congress before slipping back out of sight? Now, here's the twist. For JWST to see anything in that range, it would need to be massive. I'm talking moon-sized at minimum, or radiating heat. And if it is radiating heat, we're not talking about a rock. We're talking about technology. And the rumor isn't just that JWST saw it. It's that what it saw was moving, not drifting, not falling. It was course correcting, which means someone or something is steering it. And if that's true, if the government knows what this is, and they do, then they wouldn't stop at hiding telescope data. They'd stop the people with the telescopes. They didn't need to ban sky watching. They just needed to make it harder. In mid-2024, two of the biggest home telescope brands, Orion and Meade, went dark almost overnight. One declared bankruptcy. The other was quietly acquired and restructured. Both stopped producing their most advanced consumer models. No announcement, no scandal, just gone. On paper, amateur astronomy still exists, but the bar to entry just jumped. The parts got more expensive. The software got locked behind licensing walls. And the supply chain for precision optics choked. It doesn't sound like much until you realize those two companies made up the backbone of sky watching in North America and Europe. They were the gateway, the toolkit, the eyes. And now, unless you're already equipped, already trained, and already linked to an institution, you're blind. It's not about stopping everyone. It's about stopping enough people, creating just enough silence to make sure no one sees the thing coming until it's too late. But telescopes aren't the only thing going missing. So are the people who knew where to look. If someone wanted to hide something in the sky, you'd expect them to go after the telescopes. But what about the people behind them? After the hardware started disappearing, I started wondering who else might have seen something, not just in 2024, but before that. That's when the pattern began to surface. At first, it was just a list, a few astronomers who died unexpectedly. But then I looked closer, and something started to feel off. Chile, Australia, Hawaii, Arizona. Different continents, different years, but every one of them had access to the exact slice of sky an inbound object might use, especially if it was coming from behind the sun, using the southern celestial hemisphere as cover. And these weren't flukes. These were observatories with deep infrared impact modeling and submillimeter tracking. The tools you need to see something faint, slow, and not yet supposed to exist. So here's what I found. Koichiro Morita. He was stabbed outside his apartment in Chile. Tom Marsh. Disappeared from Las Campanas. Found dead 10 days later. Mark Aronson. Crushed by the telescope dome hatch in Arizona. Eugene Shoemaker. Killed in a remote vehicle crash in Australia. Walter Steiger. Struck by a car in Hawaii. Richard Crowe died in a Jeep accident, also in Hawaii. Some were field accidents. Some were bizarre, some were violent, but all of them had the perfect vantage point. When you map their observatories, you get a near-perfect arc, a corridor stretching across the southern sky. At high inclination, right where a slow-moving high-angle object would pass if it were coming in under the radar. This wasn't about belief, this was about line of sight. And it seems like every time someone got close to that line, something happened. This isn't just about where people died, it's about who controls the view and who doesn't. After seeing the pattern of deaths, I asked myself something simple. If the people who could have seen it are gone, then who's still watching? Because somebody is. You don't just abandon a sky corridor like that. You cover it. You gatekeep it. You make sure whatever's up there stays quiet until it's too late for the rest of us to do anything about it. And when you look at who still can watch, it's not individuals. It's not amateurs. It's institutions. Big ones. The United States government, through the National Science Foundation and the Department of Energy, maintains direct or joint control over a web of powerful observatories, many of them in the Southern Hemisphere, right along the arc we just talked about. Chile, Argentina, South Africa, Australia. Remote skies, high elevation, minimal light pollution, perfect conditions for tracking faint infrared signatures. And those observatories aren't just national, they're international collaborations with one agency always in the room, the NSF, the National Science Foundation, which oversees most of the world's top optical sky surveys, along with its quieter shadow partner, the Department of Energy, better known for nukes, but deeply embedded in classified optics and data systems. DOE isn't just about nuclear power. They run some of the most classified physics projects in the world. So when you see DOE funding quiet installations in remote sky corridors, you start asking questions. But then there's the one that really stands out, the Vatican. Most people don't know this, but the Vatican has its own astronomical research group, VORG. And its most advanced telescope isn't in Rome, it's in Arizona, Mount Graham International Observatory. It houses the Large Binocular Telescope, one of the most powerful optical infrared systems on Earth. It was built in collaboration with the University of Arizona, but Vatican scientists have direct access to the data. So now ask yourself, why does the Vatican, a religious institution, need a world-class deep-field dual-optic infrared telescope? What are they looking for? And why are they looking from there? Because Mount Graham just happens to have a clean line of sight right into the same high inclination corridor. It's not that they don't want people watching the sky. It's that they only want certain people watching it. People who can control what's seen. People who don't have to answer questions. So what exactly are they watching for? Well, let's rewind the clock and find the first time this object may have shown up. If you follow this trail long enough, the telescope shutdowns, the dead astronomers, the institutional chokehold, you eventually hit a wall. And that's when things get strange, because while the public records stop, the encrypted ones don't. There's a site that's been quietly publishing for years. No ads, no names, no clear authorship. Just layers of linguistics, machine learning, and cryptic messages scattered across dozens of synthetic languages. It's called Forgotten Languages. Most people write it off as AI noise. But if you read closely, especially the embedded English fragments, you start to see something repeat. DP-2147. They describe it as an infrared-emitting object, not bound by standard orbital mechanics. Sometimes it's called a probe, sometimes something else. But then comes the weirdest part. That same name, DP-2147, also appears in an old astronomical journal from 1827. Back then, it was part of a star catalog compiled at the Dorpat Observatory in what is now Estonia. And according to the record, that object changed its position by 300 degrees in right ascension over a 2-year span. That's not just unusual, that's impossible. It violates everything we know about gravitational motion, parallax drift, and stellar mapping. Unless it wasn't a star, or a planet, or anything natural at all. And here's the part no one wants to talk about. The original Dorpat catalog described DP2147 as having an unusually low luminosity, consistent with a black surface or extremely low albedo. The kind of thing you'd see if an object were intentionally designed to absorb light or to hide from it. So two different centuries, same object, same name, same impossible motion. Whatever this thing is, it's not new. It's been here, circling, watching. And if it's been here before, maybe it's already touched our planet in ways we never understood. The deeper you go, the harder it is to believe this thing hasn't done anything yet. Because when you line up the historical records, you start to see events that don't just feel strange, they feel engineered. Start with the Carrington event of September 1st, 1859. A massive solar flare followed by coronal mass ejection that reached Earth in just 17 hours. Now that's not just fast, that's almost physically impossible. Most CMEs take 2 to 4 days to arrive. But this one? It ripped across space like it was being aimed. It hit Earth so hard, it set telegraph lines on fire. Auroras lit up the skies in the Caribbean. Compasses spun. Technology failed. And then, silence. To this day, no one fully understands how that CME moved the way it did. But what if it didn't come straight from the sun? What if it was channeled? There's a theory, quiet, fringe, and mostly whispered among plasma physicists, that a toroid-shaped object could act like a lens, focusing electromagnetic energy. Not creating the solar flare, just shaping it, guiding it, turning a raw burst into a targeted strike. And here's where it gets even weirder. The Carrington event happened in 1859, just 32 years after DP2147 was first recorded, behaving impossibly at the Dorpat Observatory. And back then, when astronomers saw something small, dark, and fast moving near the sun, they gave it a name, Planet Vulcan. They thought it was a hidden planet, something that explained Mercury's orbital anomalies. But it was never seen again, not officially. So maybe it wasn't a planet. Maybe it was this. Maybe DP2147 didn't just pass by. Maybe it intervened. And if it's been here before, maybe we've already tried to talk to it, or at least warn it that we exist. If this object is real, and it's been here before, then it should have left behind scars. So I started looking for them, not in the sky, but in the data. And what I found points to something that doesn't just move, it pulls. In 1972 and 1973, NASA launched Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11, the first deep space probes designed to escape the solar system. They were fast, light, radioactive powered, and in the vacuum of space, they should have moved along clean, predictable trajectories. But they didn't. As they moved beyond 20 astronomical units from the sun, both probes started experiencing something strange, a tiny but consistent deceleration, pulling them slightly sunward. No thrust, no gravity wells, just a constant unaccounted for drag. It became known as the Pioneer Anomaly. For years, NASA tried to explain it away. Thermal radiation, leaky instruments, data artifacts, but none of the explanations quite fit. The signal was too clean, too precise, too persistent. Then, in the 1990s, when researchers went back to study the original data tapes, they discovered entire segments were missing. Crucial windows, like the days around Pioneer 10's encounter with Jupiter, were just gone. Magnetic tape damage, they said. Untranslatable files. Corrupted formats. Whatever it was, it created just enough of a gap to prevent a full reconstruction of the anomaly. But here's where it gets darker. Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 launched a few years later. Didn't experience the same anomaly. Similar design, similar energy source, no deceleration. Why? Because their trajectories were different. Their escape vectors didn't intersect the object's corridor. Pioneers went north and south. Voyagers went east and west. If this thing has mass, if it has a field, a gravitational envelope, or something we don't understand, then the Pioneers may have brushed its influence. Not directly, just close enough to feel the drag. A fingerprint in the dark. And here's the part that should scare us. After 1977, we stopped trying to talk to anything out there. Not everything in this story is about hiding. Some of it might be about delaying. For years, people have pointed to high-frequency research facilities like HARP in Alaska or SURA in Russia, blaming them for everything from weather manipulation to mind control. But what if the truth is stranger than that? What if these installations weren't built to control us, but to hold back something else? Both HARP and SURA pump massive amounts of energy into the ionosphere, ostensibly for research on radio wave propagation and upper atmospheric physics. But what they're really doing might have more to do with Earth's internal stability than its airwaves. Because here's the theory. If something is inbound, massive, artificial, and disruptive, then the planet's natural systems would begin responding to it early. And that response might include pressure shifts, tectonic stress, or crustal imbalance. So what if the purpose of HARP and SURA isn't destruction, but venting? By subtly warming the poles, destabilizing the jet stream, and accelerating polar melt, these systems may be relieving deep pressure trapped beneath thick glacial shelves, deliberately melting ice to reduce weight on the crust, lowering the risk of sudden slippage or axis realignment. The pole shift that I have just recently made a video on. The evidence? It's subtle, but it's there. The 2021 Texas freeze, a polar vortex that dropped deep into the southern U.S. for no clear reason, increasing El Niño and La Niña volatility. Aurora bands bending farther and more violently than recorded in decades. Strange weather, odd jet stream behavior, deep quakes in places they shouldn't be. What if all of it is artificial? Not as an attack, as a fire extinguisher. A way to bleed pressure from a planet under cosmic strain. Because if this object really is affecting Earth's internal systems, then someone's been trying to buy us a few more years. Which raises the question, why delay it at all? What exactly are they buying time to survive? If this object is real, and if it's been here before, then maybe the question isn't, what is it? Maybe the question is, what does it do? And what I'm about to say may be the most unsettling part of this entire story. Because this thing may not be attacking us, it may be testing us. In 2006, and again in 2014, a NASA-funded balloon experiment called ANITA, the Antarctic Impulsive Transient Antenna, recorded something that shouldn't exist. High-energy tau neutrinos, invisible subatomic particles, were detected coming through the Earth. Not from the sky, not from space, but from the ground up. That's not just rare, that's impossible under current physics. Neutrinos are notorious for passing through matter. Trillions of them fly through your body every second without ever hitting a single atom. But at ultra-high energies, they're supposed to interact, especially when passing through an entire planet. So when ANITA detected signals that appeared to originate from deep inside the Earth, scientists were stunned. At first, they blamed it on noise, instrument error, cosmic rays. But nothing lined up. The trajectory, the timing, the decay patterns, all of it pointed to a single terrifying possibility. Something was firing high energy particles through the planet as if mapping it, or worse, destabilizing it. And here's where it connects. Neutrinos can pass through nearly anything, but they do interact with dense material at specific energies, like the kind you'd find in the Earth's core. And since the 1990s, we've seen a quiet spike in deep focus earthquakes, quakes originating not at fault lines, but from hundreds of kilometers below the crust, where nothing should be moving. Nothing except molten iron and heat. We've also seen increasing magnetic pole drift, with the North Pole accelerating towards Siberia in ways we can't model. What if this object, DP-2147, or whatever it truly is, has the ability to emit focused neutrino beams? Not to destroy, but to weaken, to heat, to stress test Earth's magnetic and tectonic resilience. Like probing a ship for cracks before deciding whether to sink it. We wouldn't even know it was happening. We'd blame the sun, blame the climate, blame ourselves. But the pattern would remain. Sudden bursts of deep Earth activity, auroral anomalies, geomagnetic instability, followed by silence. And then, more. This isn't war. It's a stress test, a calibration, and the countdown ends in 2027. We've been talking about a pattern, a hidden object, dead scientists, broken probes, missing data, and subtle signs of something pulling at the edges of our planet. But there's one more piece that won't let go of me. In 2022, Lou Elizondo, former head of the Pentagon's UAP task force, sat down for an interview. Halfway through, the host asked him a question he clearly wasn't expecting. They asked him, if you knew everything you know now, would you still have kids? Elizondo froze, choked, and then gave the kind of answer people give when they're not allowed to speak directly. Quote, we've had maybe 50 years to prepare. 50 years. Since the mid-70s, around the same time we launched the Voyagers and then stopped sending interstellar messages. What happens at the end of a 50-year window? That brings us to 2027, a year that keeps showing up, not in headlines, but between the lines, in the way people like Elizondo talk around it, in the way funding shifts, in the way telescope companies vanish, just a few years too early. 2027 isn't just a calendar date, it's a cutoff, a transition point, the end of plausible deniability. Maybe the object gets closer. Maybe it becomes visible. Maybe something activates. Or maybe someone finally says it out loud. Because here's what it looks like from this side of the curtain. They've known. They've known for a long time. They shut down the sky. They scrubbed the probes. They closed the loops of public access. And then they built bunkers. Not for a war. Not for a pandemic. But for something they refuse to explain. Whatever it is, they've built bunkers for it, and they're not telling us why. All right, so let's stop for a second. We've just spent a lot of time walking through dead astronomers, vanishing telescope companies, missing probe data, strange anomalies in deep space, and the theory that something artificial might be heading toward Earth, or already here. And if you've made it this far, there's probably a part of you that's thinking, come on, this all sounds insane. And honestly, yeah, it does. If I was watching this video instead of making it, I'd be saying the same thing. Some of this stuff is way out there. Some of it, it's circumstantial. Some of it might just be weird coincidences stacked on top of each other. The Pioneer anomaly could be heat radiation. The dead astronomers might be tragic unrelated accidents. Forgotten languages could be AI gibberish posted by a guy with too much time and the node spaces install. We know how this looks, but here's the part that keeps me from walking away from it. Too many of these threads lead to the same corridor of sky. Too many systems, infrared, submillimeter, ionospheric, have gone quiet in just the last few years. And too many people in official positions are dropping just enough breadcrumbs to suggest something is coming. I don't know what DP-2147 really is. I don't know if 2027 is the date. And I don't know if this object is a probe, a weapon, a test, or just a ghost in the data. But I do know this. When governments build bunkers, scrub databases, and restructure telescope supply chains, they're not doing it for fun. They're doing it for a reason. And they're not telling you what that reason is. This channel isn't about certainty. It's about curiosity. We don't make claims. We follow the patterns. We ask, why is this being buried? Who benefits from silence? And what happens if we start pulling those threads together? So yeah, maybe none of this is real. But then again, maybe they just don't want us to know what is. I don't know what it is. I don't know if anyone does. But I keep thinking about this moment we're in. All the noise, all the division, the constant distraction. Like we're doing everything except look up. And maybe that's the point. Maybe this isn't about some giant object barreling toward Earth. Maybe it's not an invasion. Maybe it's an audit. Something ancient. Something patient. Not here to destroy us, but to witness us. To see what we became. To see what we did with the time we were given. To see if we woke up. And it's weird, but that thought doesn't scare me. It humbles me. Because if something's watching, if something is out there measuring our civilization by its own rules, then maybe this whole thing has never been about them. Maybe the real question is, did we take care of each other? Did we take care of this place? Did we evolve past noise, past greed, past our own blinders? Or did we treat life like a warehouse we could loot before the lights went out? Maybe this isn't our apocalypse. Maybe this is our report card. And maybe our real test isn't surviving what's coming. It's waking up before it gets here. All right, if you made it this far, thank you. I don't take that lightly. This episode was different, not just because of the theory, but because of what it asks of us. To pause, to think, to really look at the sky and at each other with the weight of that question still echoing. What if something's watching? Just to see who we really are. If that moved something in you, even a little, if you believe in asking the hard questions and following the strange ones, then I hope you'll consider supporting this channel. Subscribe, share it, or hit us up at patreon.com/divergentfiles if you want to help us keep making videos like this without watering them down. And we'll see soon enough how real this theory is. We'll see in the suppression that this video gets, whether it gets pushed out or not. And I have a suspicion it won't get pushed out. Hence why your support, your subscription, your pushing of this video will help us and this channel continue to spread the truth. But most of all, stay curious, because we're not done yet, not even close. This is Divergent Files. The sky is just the beginning, and you are truly appreciated.